Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Neil Coulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. I am alongside sole proprietor and first dignitary of Steel Curtain Radio, Lance Williams. You are listening to The Standard is the Standard, the Steelers pregame podcast heading into week 7. It's Ravens Steelers week. Arguably, and I only say that to cover my ass, but arguably the best rivalry in all of sports. The Steelers and the Ravens, regardless of their record, regardless of the position of the season, regardless of where they are playing the football game, it doesn't get any better as far as the NFL is concerned and competition in general, in my opinion, than the Steelers and the Ravens facing off. Lance, I am partially excited for this game and, in a way, not all that excited for it. A couple different reasons for that. Let's start this off simply, though. Neither the Ravens nor the Steelers are in a position I think most people would have figured both of them would be right now. These are two teams that cannot run the football to save their lives. They cannot protect their quarterbacks, and they're not particularly all that good. The Steelers at 1-4 obviously are in a little bit bigger of a hole than the 3-3 Ravens are, but in many ways, these teams are pretty similar in that they're average, aren't they? What do we think of these teams right now?
Well, the Steelers are 1-4, so the Steelers are actually below average, and the Ravens are 3-3, which is the definition of average. So this year, at least for this game, it's hyped. It's a hype matchup. I don't think most fans of either team thinks that either one of them have a ghost of a chance of competing for a Super Bowl. So right now, this is a rivalry that's more compelling because of the past, not because of the current.
Well, let's talk about the past for a little bit then. Last year, I think it's fairly obvious to say the Ravens really sort of took over this rivalry, except they really had a difficult time beating a Steelers team. Might be a little bit better off last season than they are right now, but if they are, it's not substantial. And the Ravens probably should have been playing a lot better than they are right now. The Ravens took a game off the Steelers last year in Pittsburgh in which their offense failed to score a touchdown. Quarterback Joe Flacco completed roughly 50% of his passes and did not factor into a touchdown or a turnover in that game. In fact, that was probably his best value through four quarters was the fact he did not give the ball back to the Steelers. At the same time, the Steelers didn't take the ball away from anybody last year, and up until week 6 of this season, struggled to do that in borderline impressive fashion. The Ravens now, on the other hand, are turning the ball over at a very high rate. I believe Flacco has 12 turnovers on his own this year with fumbles and interceptions. What kind of offense should the Steelers expect going into this game? What type of unit is this right now with Baltimore?
I think you aptly describe Baltimore, particularly when you look at them. You know, statistically, they're only averaging 2.7 yards per carry, which is 31st in the league. You look at Ray Rice, I don't think he's the same player. Actually, I think Pierce is probably a better fit for them now. They don't really have a ton of weapons outside of Dallas Clark. And, you know, so when you look at their offense, it's not really explosive. It's sort of pedestrian. The loss of Pitta, the loss of Bolden, and, you know, other than Torrey Smith, and, you know, it's just a pedestrian offense. And actually, when you watch the Ravens, it's just astonishing how pedestrian, how regular they are on offense. You know, a lot of their explosive plays come from special teams, you know, with Jones and Doss, it's just a pedestrian offense. It's an offense, particularly also you were talking about with that offensive line, that if the Steelers were getting after the quarterback like they have in the past, I think they could totally shut down this offense. But I think that's the rub in this game, is can the Steelers get enough pressure on an offensive line that will give it up?
Speaking of pressure, we're going to get into the Steelers' defense, and one particular component of that defense this year, Jarvis Jones, the 17th pick overall, reportedly did suffer a concussion and has been limited in practice up to this point. The Steelers' defense right now doesn't seem to be better or worse for Jarvis Jones being in there. From what I see of him, Lance, he does not look like a significant threat on the edge as a pass rusher. He looks, if not confused, then just completely overwhelmed and enveloped by opposing left tackles. Is it going to matter if Jarvis Jones is able to play in this game or not?
I don't think it's going to matter one bit. And I think, actually, he probably looked better in the Jets game because his snaps were cut. And he exchanged snaps with Worlds, and they kind of split snaps. And so, I think, again, you're spot on. I hate to agree with all your points, but I would agree. I don't think he's impacting the game to a significant standpoint where they're going to miss him. So, you know, if you give the snaps to him or if you give the snaps to Worlds, I don't think it makes much of a difference in this game. Eugene Monroe is available to be had, but I don't think with his level of experience, I don't think Jarvis Jones is the guy to take advantage of him.
Whatever it is that they'll do, it does appear that Jones and Worlds will rotate snaps again this coming week. And I think they put Jones in the position that they have simply to get him experience and get him used to playing against these NFL tackles. I'm not at all saying Jarvis Jones is not going to be a good player, that he isn't working hard, that he's a bust draft pick. It's way too early to say any of that. What I know is watching him on film, it doesn't look like there's much of a challenge for the left tackle as he's gone against. In fact, Brickashaw Ferguson usually would just take one move, take a counter move, and then watch Jones fall at his feet. Ferguson wasn't even moving. Not a competitive game for Jones. Yes, I understand he got the hurry, the one hurry that he had the entire game, the hit on quarterback Geno Smith, in which case it appears to me that there was some type of communication error among the Jets offensive line. Ferguson wasn't blocking him. They left him to a running back who didn't seem to know that he had responsibility for him. Jones just simply stepped to his inside and, you know, made a move on the quarterback. A nice move and everything like that does not make up for his lack of presence through four quarters. That was the Jets game. This is the Ravens game, though. And we're going to cover the Steelers' offense up against Baltimore's defense next after we take a quick break here on The Standard is the Standard.
Well, all right. Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. Here we go. I'm back again. Action props when I come in.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Standard is the Standard. I'm Neil Coulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He's Lance Williams, the sole proprietor of Steel Curtain Radio. Do you like that, sole proprietor? Should I say that? You sound much more business-y.
It sounds like a rap title, like MC Sole Proprietor.
Well, there you go. So you could make that one word. You could misspell it. And
exactly. I like sole proprietor.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a marketing guy. No, I'm not a marketing guy, you know, but I think somebody can come up with something for that. We'll put the intern to work, the intern that we don't currently have. We're talking Ravens Steelers week, Lance. It's an important week. This is a big week. The issue with this more than anything is it's a catharsis of sorts for fans. Steelers fans in particular that have not had a whole lot to cheer about. Last week's win against the Jets was exciting. It was fun to see if the team was 4-0 entering the game. I think we would have made a little bit bigger of a deal of it than we did. It was a victory, though, something Steelers fans have not seen in quite a long time, and in such a convincing fashion, especially in the second half, where everything seemed to click. It gives you feeling like you can come back home for the first time in what feels like forever now and beat the defending Super Bowl champions. Part of that, I think, is due to a bipolar Ravens defense. Defensively, the front seven of that team is as talented as any group in the league. I was very impressed watching them. I didn't think that they would come together in those positional units as quickly as they have. Between Terrell Suggs and Elvis Dumervil, you're looking at two potential Defensive Player of the Year candidates. Both of them get incredible amounts of pressure on the quarterback. They've been extremely difficult to stop to this point. They're playing at a very high level, to the point I'm even going to go as far as to say that they're not going to be blocked. They're not going to be stopped. They're going to get sacks. I'll even make this prediction. Both of them have double-digit sacks in this game. And I don't think anyone's really going to disagree with me. Marcus Gilbert, nursing a quadriceps injury. Who knows whether he's going to start in this game or not? He's supposed to. You never know, especially with this team and this offensive line in the last couple of years. You don't know if he's going to get in there. Let's put Mike Adams in there. So he's going to play right tackle for the first time this season. You remember what Paul Kruger did to Mike Adams last year?
Yeah, I mean, when you say double-digit sacks, do you mean three or more apiece?
I mean more than one. I don't know why I said double digits, but
now, I mean, when you look at Suggs, I mean, I paid a lot of attention to the Cleveland game. I respect Joe Thomas's game. Joe Thomas is a great player. Suggs had his way, and Suggs is back. His seven sacks are fifth in the NFL. Dumervil has five. That's eight. They have 22 as a team, which is second in the NFL. And you're absolutely right. They get after it in the front seven. The back end is shaky. Teams are going after Ladarius Webb more than ever. But when you talk about the Steeler tackles in this front seven, you know, it's, you know, the Steelers have played some very good front sevens, you know, early on this year. Jets, Bengals, and the Ravens are in that same ilk, in that same tier. It's going to be a very tough game for these tackles, no matter which tackle start, whether it's Adams or Beecham, or if it's Adams and Gilbert, or Gilbert and Beecham, whoever it is, they're going to struggle against this team trying to get protection. And I wouldn't be surprised if the game plan looks somewhat like the same game plan that they employed against the Jets. A lot of 12, some 13, a lot of two tight end stuff, not a lot of three wide receiver stuff, a lot of getting the ball out, being patient with the running game, just trying to set up some play action, keep Ben upright, and trying to get the ball out quick. So I think Steeler fans will probably be a little bit frustrated with some of the screens and stuff like that, but you know, I don't know what else they can do against this front seven.
Exactly right. They're not going to be able to block those two. Throw seven step drops out of the picture completely. Too risky with the activity generated from Suggs and from Dumervil in the situations in which they'll both be rushing the passer. You just can't do it. You can't risk it. You're not going to put two tight ends and have a seven-step drop called. It's just not going to happen. The saving grace, though, is the possibility of continuing to run and run and run for 2 yards to carry to try to set up a play-action pass, very similarly to what they did with the Jets. I agree with you that the game plan could be similar to that. Heavy run-dominating formations because they can't let those guys get after the passer too much. The key, though, is that secondary. Matt Elam, struggling. Ladarius Webb, not fully healthy. I don't care what Ravens fans talk about it as far as his rehab and how hard he works. So does Heath Miller. Heath Miller is not healthy right now either. It's a difficult injury to come back from. He's not the same cornerback that he was. He's going to get targeted. Jimmy Smith, he seems to be regressing to me. He's not a very good NFL cornerback. Their secondary is struggling quite a bit. Their saving grace is the fact that they loaded up this offseason with the specific intention in mind of getting to the quarterback while they try to rebuild the secondary a little bit. They wanted to come up with a pass rush to take some pressure off of that secondary. And right now, One unit's doing their job and the other one isn't. So as far as the Steelers are concerned, they're going to need to find a way to get their receivers into patterns and give them an opportunity to get open down the field before Suggs takes Ben's head off the way that he does every time he plays the Steelers. Doomerville only makes that even harder. This is, you know, a tad better than Paul Kruger coming off the edge now. Whether it's Gilbert, Adams, whoever, it doesn't even matter. Those guys are going to get to the quarterback. To me, Lance, this game comes down to the play of each team's respective quarterback. The Steelers are not going to be able to keep the Ravens' pass rush at bay. They're just not. What can Roethlisberger do to throw it back in their face, to play that against them? It's short flare throws, it's dumb passes, all the things that Roethlisberger really doesn't want to do, but he's going to set himself up to make plays down the field. He's going to have to. That's the only way the Steelers are going to score. The worst part of this is we're glorifying their pass rush. Their run defense is probably better than their pass rush is. You know, the Ravens are a solid defensive team. They're not a dominant one right now, but they're a very solid defensive team. They can stop the run, though. The Steelers can't run on air the way it seems right now. Unless they really get some things going this week, they're going to have a problem with that. But they're going to have to continue to run the ball, and they're going to have to play this like it's going to be 13-10. And that's not even a bad prediction for a score for this game.
Now, and I think that's the rub. I mean, when you look at the Ravens' offense, you can almost take the approach of if you can keep things in front of you and not give up the big play to Torrey Smith, that their offense isn't explosive enough to put up a bunch of points on you.
Yeah, if the Steelers, they don't have anything but Torrey Smith. As far as plays go, they don't have anything else.
You know, if the Steelers don't turn the ball over, this is going to be a close game. But when you look at that Ravens D, sixth in run defense, 3.6 yards per carry. Again, we talked about the sacks. I mean, they forced 7 forced fumbles, and they have 4 picks. They have 11 turnovers. So this is a team that is turning the football over. They have to get turnovers, and they have to get good special teams play. If the Steelers don't turn it over and don't give up a return to a Jacoby Jones or a Tandon Doss, they're going to have a great opportunity to win this game in the fourth quarter.
I'll tell you what, if Tandon Doss ends up being the difference in this game the way that Jacoby Jones was last year, in a game the Steelers' defense held the Ravens scoreless, or touchdownless, I should say, on the offensive side of the ball, and they lose at home in prime time. If it's Tandon Doss, who had to be one of the worst receivers in the league last year, if a guy like that's going to make plays on him, the Steelers deserve to lose the game. Either way, we're not completely pessimistic here on the standard. It's the standard. The Ravens are not a terrible team. We're going to go over all that, and we're going to go over a few positive moments, both from the present and the past, when we come back here on The Standard is the Standard.
Well, all right. Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. All right. All right.
Welcome back. Standard is the Standard, your pregame Steelers podcast / show / audio enjoyment. I'm Neil Coulong, the managing editor of Behind the Steel Curtain. He is Lance Williams, the sole proprietor of Steel Curtain Radio. It's Ravens Steelers week, as we've mentioned here, and we're going to keep this going by discussing a few of the positive things we can look forward to with this Steelers team. And Lance, I think we get a lot of that positive out of a game against the Jets in which they go on the road 0-4 coming out of the bye week, but it was a different team. There was a different energy to it. There wasn't a panicked feeling about it. It felt more aggressive. It felt more confident. Now, maybe that's just me watching it on TV, watching it back though. It really felt like this team was hungry, but not starving if that makes any sense. They really made a point to hit. They made a point to fly to the ball, and they did better little things than they have all season. I'm excited from that sense because, you know, to put it bluntly, they look like a football team in this game, and there were long stretches of time before that. They didn't show that.
The physicality had returned. I mean, not only with the Troy hit, Timmons was laying wood, Williams was laying wood. I mean, they were out there hitting. And, you know, so that was good to see. I mean, also, it just seemed to be a tad sharper. Even on the road where it started off a little bit shaky, they were able to get into a nice offensive rhythm. I thought they stayed somewhat patient with the run game, where they were still able to get play action involved, even though they weren't able to get a lot of yards per carry. I think everybody's encouraged by the play of Le'Veon Bell. Even though Beecham had his ups and down moments in the game, I think from a mental standpoint, maybe not physically, he seems to be more organized than Adams mentally. Like, he's not confused as to what his assignments are. He may not be as physically gifted as Adams. Definitely he isn't. But you see a little consistency there, where at least an offensive coordinator kind of has a better idea of what his tackle can do, so he can scheme around it and call plays around it. So you saw a little more consistency. And you also see the continued great play of Antonio Brown, who continues to catch balls. And you see Heath Miller also playing better, looking a little more healthier, being able to get down the seam, make a very good catch in that game. So you're starting to see the Steelers play a little bit better. Now, it's still going to be key that they win this game, and this game is going to be very difficult whether they're playing good or not.
Let me go back to something you said earlier about Mike Adams, and I hadn't thought of it before, but disorganized is probably the best word to describe him. Organized could be the best way to describe Kelvin Beecham. We haven't seen him play enough left tackle to say that, but it's like, you know, I can only come up with like a John Hughes kind of reference here, but it's like the geeky kid in high school versus the super popular, you know, careless, party animal type of kid. Beecham is the nerd. He's put in the work in class, and he's getting a chance to finally use that against the big dumb jock in Mike Adams. I don't know if that inspires me or what, but the fact of the matter is, from a technical standpoint, Beecham is better than Adams is right now. Whether that should be the case or not, wherever it is that they were drafted, if you took a guy who knows a lot about playing offensive line but doesn't have any idea who Mike Adams or Kelvin Beecham are, and you said one of these guys is a seventh-round pick and one of them is a second-round pick in the same draft, which one's which, he's going to say Beecham is the second-round guy. But he's also going to say that Beecham shouldn't have been taken in the second round. That's the main issue that they have. They don't have the talent, smarts or otherwise, they're not going to have the talent to protect that edge. That being said, they're going to have to go off schedule. I thought Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator for the Ravens, made an interesting point in an article by ESPN's Jameson Hensley that came out Thursday. The Steelers, it's almost as if their play starts 3 seconds after the snap. That's the kind of style that they play against the Ravens. Roethlisberger drops back. If he doesn't get a primary read that he likes, he's going to buy some time and set their kind of secondary plan in motion, if that makes any sense. The receivers know where to break after they run a primary route. They know where to go. They know where to follow. They know where to trail. And it's not something they're doing spontaneously. It has to have been called at some point. They have to be practicing this because it's too coordinated.
It's funny that you say that.
Have to follow that. Are they able to do that in the secondary, Lance?
No, no way. No one can do it consistently against it because it seems sandlot, but there is some organization to it. Because it's funny that you said that, because I interviewed Max Starks, longtime tackle of the Steelers, years ago, and he made an interesting comment about Ben. He said that Ben moves the secondary and safety guys with his eyes and his legs. So there are times where he'll just look them off, But then there are times when he'll just move a safety with his movement, with his legs. And he was like, you know, Ben is unique in that way, that there aren't many quarterbacks that can do it or do it. But Ben has the ability to move secondary guys, excuse me, with both his legs and or his eyes. So I think you're dead on. There is another element to the initial play if it does not work. And he does use that movement to his advantage.
Doesn't it seem like the Steelers' entire offensive game plan is basically going to be that? There's what Todd Haley is calling, and then there's what Ben Roethlisberger is going to do. He understands what this game is. He's going to love the challenge that's coming off the edge from two great pass rushers who, I'm sure it's coincidental, and Ozzie Newsome had no idea the amount of trouble that Elvis Dumervil and Terrell Suggs have caused Ben Roethlisberger over the years. I don't know if there are two guys who have been more disruptive as individuals to the Steelers offense than those two. And they're on the same team. I've been dreading this day for a while. The second that whatever it is that happened in Denver with Dumervil, the second that he ended up in Baltimore, the second that he came free, I knew he was going to end up in Baltimore just because of what he's done to Ben Roethlisberger in the games that they've played in the past. Roethlisberger has to know that going in. He has to know to some degree his pass protection is not going to be ideal, to put it mildly. You've got to think that what they're trying to do is figure out a way to buy Roethlisberger another second or two to make them exploit that weak secondary. So in a lot of ways, I almost feel like this is going to be Roethlisberger's biggest game ever, or he's going to get sacked 15 times.
There is a potential that it could be ugly like the Philadelphia game. But I don't know. This is an interesting game. I mean, this is an interesting game. I mean, both teams are not great teams. And so, you know, it could be just one of those games where, you know, average teams play a close game. Because if there's an offensive line that the Steelers can get healthy against in terms of pressure, it's the Ravens' offensive line. I mean, although the Steelers do not have, you know, outside edge rushers like the Ravens, I mean, they still are going up against a Raven offensive line that's given up 19 sacks and has given up 36 hits on the quarterback. So, you know, there's some hay to be made against that offensive line, and the Steelers may be able to execute properly and get that pressure that they need to stymie this offense.
Will they do it? Won't they do it? It's Raven Steelers week. We're going to continue writing about these things throughout the weekend on Behind the Steel Curtain, so please feel free to check that out. In conclusion, Lance, give me your prediction here. What's your winner and score?
I got to go with the number 7. And when I look at the Ravens, Suggs has 7 sacks this season. The Steelers defense has 7 sacks this season. The Steelers are starting either Adams and Beecham or Beecham and Gilbert. Advantage Ravens. I think this Ravens defense is going to really get after the Steelers, and I think the Ravens will beat the Steelers. I think it's going to be a close game. I like the Ravens to beat the Steelers 17-9.
You mentioned the number 7, Lance, and there's only one number 7 that matters. The Steelers are going to win this game because Ben Roethlisberger, number 7 of the Pittsburgh Steelers, is going to find a way to do it. 13-10 Steelers, there's going to be a lot of crazy stuff in this game, and it's going to feel a lot more than the 13-10 score that these two teams had last year. I'm Neil Coulon with Behind the Steel Curtain, the sole proprietor of Steel Curtain Radio, Lance Williams. We wish you all the best of luck heading into this weekend, whichever team you're rooting for. May they all stay injury-free. Screw the Ravens. Go Steelers. Have a good one.
Well, all right. Oh, yeah.